Welcome to the Well Collab Feminine Leadership Podcast. I am Tammy Zadunik, founder of the Well Collab and your host for today. Our podcast features feminine leadership principles and women leading both in their professional and personal lives. Let's get started.
I kind of feel like with feminine leadership, there's just something about women being cozy and warm in a home.
Yes.
So Trina and I, we met in the lineup at the YWCA.
It's right. A lineup to get lunch. The lunch lineup.
Yeah, this is why I preach talk to strangers. If you feel safe, talk to strangers.
That's right. Yeah. And that, how many opportunities come out of that? How many really cool connections? I'm a social worker, so that makes it easy. I'm passionate about helping people, which probably is why I'm a social worker. And I didn't think I was a social worker at heart before I went to social work school. And then it was just kind of the perfect profession for me. Because of my many years of experience doing that and opportunities and different levels of positions at work, I got to leadership positions, which I have to say, I love leadership positions. And not so much because I like to be the boss or like to be in charge. Okay, maybe I like being in charge just a little bit.
Me too.
But part of it is because I like freedom. I am so about freedom, which is probably why I don't like to pigeonhole myself into something and why I do many, many, many things, like multiple things. And I don't want to be somebody that, I guess, is like, oh, she only does this and this is all she does. But there are benefits of doing that if you stick to one thing. Is that because you become like this expert?
I know. Yeah, there's an expertise that comes from being very, very niche. But I think that is more of a masculine leadership quality. And I think and I say this because for the last 6 years, I've just spent all of my time talking to women and hearing women's stories. And women tend to have multiple passions. They tend to dip their toe into a few different things because we're really good at multitasking, in the sense of not that we're doing two things at once, although you are currently soothing my dog and being interviewed on a podcast. But I guess we have multiple interests. And I think when we try to shut off certain parts of ourselves to focus on one thing, it isn't natural. And what I remember from our conversation in the lunch line was that I remember thinking, we don't need to apologize for having many passions, and we don't need to come into a conversation feeling like we have to make excuses for it. Because I think I have felt that way. I mean, The Well has a podcast. We have circles. We have these panels now. I do photography. I have video and photo company. I'm chair of a board for sexual victims or survivors of sexual violence. But I really love doing multiple things in my day. And why should I either apologize or stop? I don't think we need to do that.
Right. And so saying that, there are times where I go, okay, Trina, you need to tamper it down and just focus on two things. And, sometimes I do overwhelm myself, but I work well under pressure. There's that too. So I'll scale lots of things back, and I'm like, okay, I'm only going to do these couple things, and I'll do them for a while, and I'm like, that's kind of boring, and I'm missing out on a lot of things. I feel that.
Yeah.
So I start creeping out a little bit out there. Oh, I'll do a little bit of this, and I'll do a little bit of that, and then before you know it, I'm juggling 10 things. But it's not only very stimulating, but it's just, I am so engaged in life then. I just feel so engaged.
That's what I was going to say. When you were talking, I was like, because you're glowing and you're shining as you're talking. And I'm thinking, everything is cyclical for women in life. This is very normal for us to rest, retreat, and then to get inspired or maybe get restless, start seeking things, get creative, get inspired, do all these things, and then rest and retreat. And we do that in the course of every month. We do that in the course of every year. That's a part of our nature. And I think what a beautiful way to live fully engaged in what you're needing in those moments. And that's okay, I think, to take on too much and then to scale back. As long as we're not experiencing actual full-blown burnout.
Right.
Where we get ill.
Yes.
That's, we want to kind of avoid those things because that's really hard on our systems.
Yes. And so because of that, like, I have experienced that, I mean, way back, but that's got me then to, I also do a workshop called the Self Elements of Self-Care and Well-Being, because I am a big self-care person. Because if I want to do all these multiple things that I just are fun and stimulating and make me engaged and inspired, yes, you do need to take, as you said, moments and periods of rest and recovery.
So I want to hear two things. One is what really gets you excited. But before we talk about that, share with us a little bit of self-care for that you do for yourself in your routine, because I think it helps for other women to hear it and also receive permission to do that, especially yes. from someone who is a leader in the community.
So that is, I would say, one of the biggest or the most difficult part of self-care is giving yourself permission. And I don't know what that's about. Like, what is that about? I'm thank God I'm past that. And sometimes, you know, my husband, he'll be like, oh, you know, you're flying off, or you're going to go somewhere like on your own. Like, he doesn't understand that, because part of it is that he loves hanging out with me, and he feels maybe some rejection there, you know, kind of thing. That's the only part that I have to, like, you know, comfort him, and it's okay. Like, I'll be back, and it's just this thing that I need to do so I can, you know, take care of everything else. And I know you love being taken care of, and I know, you know, and have fun and that. So, but I need this little time to myself, and I need me time. So that's the part of it. But for me, like, I'll advocate for myself, you know, and say, no, like, you see all that I do, and you appreciate all that I do. But in order for me to do all that I do, I need to, like, take a couple days and just kind of, like, off I go. And I just even did it not even that long ago. So I went to Victoria. It was a National Women's Conference. I would start on Friday late afternoon, but I flew in Wednesday. And I just wanted that time just to, like, enjoy walking around by myself, being in a hotel by myself. And it was just to decompress and just to, you know, take it in. Of course, you know, I was thinking, oh, it would have been great to him to be here. But then I wouldn't have that time where I would sit in a coffee shop by myself, just sipping on a coffee, people watching, and it's glorious. I can't even tell you how amazing that feels.
Being alone and really nurturing that relationship with ourselves. I think it's so hard for women in their 20s. I think they have more time for themselves, but they don't, and they're not at the point in their lives where they really need it. Or maybe they don't. Maybe, I'm sure they appreciate it, but probably not in the same way a woman in her 40s, 50s plus would mm-hmm. do. I think when women go through their childbearing years, they're so needed.
Yes.
And there's no escaping it.
No. Right.
And it really can feel trapped and hinder mm-hmm. on your core value, which is, my core value is also freedom.
Yes.
So that's a really hard time. So once you start to feel that taste of freedom mm-hmm. and you realize, oh, actually, I can leave. Like, I was telling Trina before we started, I'm going away tomorrow from Thursday to Monday on a trip with my girlfriends, just to hike the hills yes. in wine country in Canada. We're staying in Canada, in yes. Parramatta. And how much I just really value that alone time. And in the more reading I'm doing, I'm reading The Feminine Face of God right now, which is a spiritual awakening and unfolding of women. And it really does require us to have so much alone time in order to connect with our spiritual, our inner self. And I think that's what you're talking about. When I people watch and I drink a coffee and I sit, that's spiritual for me.
Yes.
That's soul.
Yes. Yeah. And it just, life slows down and you feel grateful, like all these positive emotions come and there's stillness. There's just so much value in stillness.
Do you have a family?
I do. Yes.
How did you navigate those years with someone who is a core value of freedom? How did you navigate that time of being with your family and trying to like find yourself, or did you?
I didn't as much. I think how I did that, like my escaping was through crafting. Like I was a crafter and I loved crafting. I'm very creative anyway. Like that's a passion. That's just what, you know, that part of my brain just goes bing, 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 bing. Like it just lights up like crazy every time I'm creative. But I don't know if you know, but when you're in a creative state, I mean, in a creative state where there's no pressure, like there's no pressure, it's just a free flowing kind of creative state, you can't feel stress. Like it like washes away stress. And so that makes sense. Like I learned that, you know, long after, but that made sense. I was like, no wonder I felt like, yeah, like I was kind of on a little mini brain holiday.
I will say that as a photographer and an artist, once I get into that flow state, that I totally relate to that. You don't feel stress. And I think that saved me, my mental health with having kids. I think working as a creative, for me, my income came from creativity, both paid my bills, allowed me to do fun stuff, buy my kids' clothes and activities and have a little freedom. And also it kept me mentally healthy. I would be often so nervous before going to a wedding or a photo shoot, and I still am very nervous. But what happens is that flow state kicks in somewhere in the process, and it all goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that freedom, and I feel healthy, and I feel in the moment, and I feel presence.
Yes.
What a gift to have to really keep your creativity alive. Because in childhood, there's lots of creativity.
Right.
But as women, to keep that creativity alive and to escape to it.
Mm-hmm. And so when I do my self-care workshop, when I want to flip it over to like what gives you joy, because you have to try to find those moments. And so my question is that what is something you do, an activity, whether it's you're alone or with somebody else, it doesn't matter. But what is it that you're in a moment or you're doing something and you lose all track of time? And whatever that is, you need to do more of that.
I agree. And I know in the creative world too, we really preach, do that for a living.
Yeah.
Find a way to be in that state as much as possible.
Yes.
I love that. I think we're so creative as women. I also believe we're created. That's why we're creative, that the whole earth is, you know, creative in just the very essence of it, and really like connecting with the earth and whatever spirituality that is for you. And just going out there and like finding creativity in like anything that inspires you. And
yeah,
just bringing back to that healthy mental state and self-care. So good for you. That I love hearing you share about that, because I think that's the thread that runs through all of us and we don't necessarily know.
Right.
And finding that joy is so important. And
yes.
And sometimes I feel like business culture or corporate devalues joy.
Yeah. And with joy, some people maybe confuse joy or pleasure, because we're always trying to avoid pain, you know, so we want the pleasure, the opposite of that, in being entertained. And that's a different thing. Like, so pleasure and joy is something that you savor, that it's you lose track of time, and it's just a good feeling. It's something that we have this confusion in regards of all around entertainment. And so entertainment can be kind of numbing, and we seem to be doing a more of that, like leaning more towards just wanting to be entertained.
Yeah. And I think now we have a generation that's growing up right now being entertained, but not necessarily accessing true pleasure,
mm-hmm.
creativity and peace.
Right.
So this is interesting that you brought that up. I actually never had anyone talk to me about that before, the entertainment versus pleasure.
Yeah.
And I think marketing around entertainment markets it as pleasure or
joy. Yes, absolutely. A 100% that this is going to bring you happiness.
So no wonder we are so confused.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. and dissatisfied.
And dissatisfied.
Yeah.
And I think that is the work of the women. I think that is a feminine leadership principle and work is pleasure, experimentation, and integrating that into your work and into your daily lives and into the lives of your family. And I think the other thing is people always think of pleasure as sex.
Yeah.
And they all of a sudden go there, right? But that's also something that marketing and media has done to us.
Yes.
Sort of sexualized pleasure.
Right.
Yes, there's an element and an aspect with pleasure and sexuality, of course. But even sexuality is the gender, but the sex we're born with, female, male. Mm-hmm. It's actually not about intercourse.
No.
And there's always this sort of like, anytime you hear the word pleasure, it's like people's minds immediately go to.
Right. And it's really, honestly, it's about connection.
It is about connection.
Yeah.
That's what we're lacking when we want any of those things, when we're wanting TV, even distraction or entertainment, we actually want connection, but we're receiving disconnection.
Exactly. Yeah.
So is this something that you think a lot about? Do you talk a lot about this with women? Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I think why I am able to just chat about this easily, not only because of my experience, but like personal experience, but just because I feel so strongly about the self-care and the importance of it and incorporate in your life. And like, you have to like be intentional about it. And so when I do my workshop, like, because I've speak about it all the time. Yeah. I can see it every day. Like, you know, and I guess because of my creative brain, you know, I'll be like, oh, I see this situation. I can connect it to self-care and again, it's about connection. What saddens me in this world is that there's this loneliness epidemic, and we're all isolated in some form or another. We're disconnected from ourselves, from each other, from our spirit. Long ago, we were very connected with our cousins and our aunts and our uncles. Like, you know, and now we're all like living far apart from each other. Some cousins or families and that we don't know each other. It's like we used to way back in the day. And I think part of it maybe is because we had to rely on each other to survive. But we're just so become individuals.
And I think there was the why. Okay, we had to have community. We had to.
Right.
That was survival.
Yes.
But that doesn't take away the fact that we still need it.
Yes.
So even though now we can survive as individuals in terms of financial and food and all these things, because that part of life has become a lot easier, it doesn't mean that we don't need the benefits.
Right.
That community offered us.
Yes. And women were like at the core of community and family. Like at the core.
I think women really, this is what I've really been noticing lately. It keeps coming up. I don't know if it's the algorithm or what it is, but women, a big part of women's lives is flourishing, nurturing, growing, connecting. We're like, when you think of Mother Earth, we're like the earth. We bloom, we blossom. It's beautiful. And then there's this larger overarching kind of, and this is where I think, and I always go into religion a little bit. I don't always, but often it comes up. So I think with Christianity, what happened was they did the Father. They have the Father God, and that is sort of like this protector. And I think what happened was we forgot about the connection between being protected as women, whereas in the tribes, the men would go out and get the food, and they would create the strength, the walls, so that the women could build the flourishing community. And we've handed over community in a sense, and culture in a sense, for men to develop, but men weren't made to develop that. So we've lost those core principles of community and connection that women really do provide. I mean, hence why the well is, I'm so passionate about the well community, because we come together as women and we talk about all this stuff.
Right.
And we connect and we build relationships, and it's slow and it's hard. And sometimes there's disagreements, but it's all very, you know, we try to just embrace and love each other and have empathy within that. And learn how to have hard conversations, because I think even the art of a difficult conversation has been lost in a sense, especially the way women do it. I think we are uniquely gifted at listening to each other and seeing the nuances
and being able to just, hey,
what do you think? Like, it's going to be okay. We could talk this through.
Yeah.
Maybe throw a little gossip in too, but
yeah.
Okay. I'm going to pause for a second.
And so I do want to tell a story because you talked about,
I don't even think we booked
at the same time or anything.
Yeah, because actually we didn't even book the same day.
Oh, gosh.
I booked with my friend Lindsay here, who's my neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
And then we called, we messaged, we were like, we're booking, you got to book. And then she booked too. So that's really, that's really coincidence.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so we're back. So,
Trina, yeah,
I want to talk about.
So you were talking about community and how women and yeah. So
women and men, we definitely design community differently. And I think we think of it differently and we have different priorities. But you had a story you want to share.
Yes.
And I would love to hear it.
Yes. And so when I was in Victoria, doing my little self-care thing, walking, along the coast there, or the harbor, there was two geese, so a gander and a goose. And it was in this like little pond there along the sidewalk. And the female was sort of getting things ready for probably to lay eggs. And I mean, it was close. Like it was I took a video, like they were like right there basically. And, you know, she's kind of doing her nesting thing and swimming around. And he was on the sidewalk because people are walking by and really just kind of like patrolling, just kind of like, you know, protecting, you know. And I thought, wow, like he is like making himself known, like kind of his presence and in intentional that he's protecting, you know, his mate. He's not being aggressive. He's not looking to fight anybody. He is just, this is my role is to, you know, my mate here is getting things ready for our future children.
And creating life is vital.
Yes.
And that is something females get to do is create life. We get to birth and we need to be protected in order to do that. And I do find that's one thing that since the more feminist movement of women working often outside of the homes full time, either for financial reasons or for just reasons of freedom and wanting to still feel productive, and that we've kind of we've lost a bit of that protection and care for the females when we're birthing and child rearing and even raising those kids. There is if you work for a business and you pay in to EI or whatever it is. I never did this. So for me, I just took time off without pay as an entrepreneur.
Right.
But there isn't, I didn't feel that there was a lot of protections in place for me with having my three kids. Now this was like, they're 13, 15, 17 now, but I still don't really think that there is. And I think maybe that's something we've lost with losing community is having those people in your home, which can feel a bit disruptive, but is actually really care if they're caring for you in the way you need, which would be doing everything and letting you just do whatever you need to do, sleep.
Yeah, because we have moments of where we're vulnerable.
It's a very vulnerable time. And yeah. I think that's why there's so much mental health issues that come up in that time is we're just not being protected and cared for the way the goose and the gander.
That's right. And yeah. And like I said, the man or the male wasn't, you know, being loud or aggressive or, you know, there wasn't like ego tied to it and, you know, like, this is me, you know, kind of like, I mean, I just feel so much sympathy for and empathy for males right now because they're like, who are we supposed to be now? Like who, like the world has changed and what's our role? And So I do feel it is tough on them, but he's there to make sure that she is protected to do what she needs to do for
the species.
Yes.
For the future.
Yes.
You know, all these amazing things. And I think it's holding women, revering, is that the word? Women more. And I think that's that whole like movement of queens, like calling women queens that, you know, we're meant to be because it's like holding us up where we should be
with equity and revered for our role and like loved and appreciated for our role, as well as men equally being held at the same level for their role, but no one's above each other.
Right.
It really is this equity of voices and of energies and of leadership skills. And how can we do that more? And I think for me, I think amplifying women's voices. I think just sharing the wisdom of women as much as I can into the world is sort of where that lines up for me. Something I can do that I enjoy doing. And I think that's also why, coming back to what you were talking about, it's so important to find the things that bring us joy, like true joy that you're talking about, not distraction, not entertainment, true joy and pleasure, and leaning more into those things.
Yes.
So let's talk for a little bit about your background, because you've worked in social work,
right?
Which is a construct that is it's not corporate because it's service,
right?
It's public service. Yes. That'd be what it would be.
Yeah. I would see myself as, even it, when I am in those leadership positions, as I am a service to others.
Right. Tell me a little bit about your path. Like, where did you start with social work and where did it go? And then I might have some questions.
Sure. Yes.
In the middle.
Yes. So, with social work, I started in, with the government in child welfare, like child protection. And I did 15 years there. And although it's maybe social workers, when they first get in, they're like, oh, I'm going to save the world. I'm going to, counsel people. And I don't know. You just have this sort of a dreamy idea of what social work is about. And then you know, when you work for the government, you're doing child protection. It is where a lot of it is administrative stuff. It's like assessing risk. You're not able to do everything. Like you just feel not just only incompetent, but I guess that you're maybe doing more harm than you're doing good. And that's really tough. Like, that's tough. And that's why maybe some people don't stick with it. And I completely understand that, because to feel that almost every day, it is really tough. But then you get those every now and then. It's not, I wouldn't say rare, but those moments that come up maybe a couple times a year where you've done some good, you know, at that moment, and you know, you're appreciated for it, or whatever the feedback, or even you just feel it in your heart. Mm. It does carry you through that next year or whatever it is. But so I did that for 15 years, and then I worked for the Children's Advocate Office as an advocate for children and youth that are in care or have are at risk of being in care, and young adults as well. Also those that are in the judicial system, being a voice for them. And that was a completely different thing, because you're kind of more of a critique towards those government systems. So I was like on the other side of the fence.
I love that.
Yeah. So that it's very different. And it's a bit easier because, you know, when you're the opposition or their watchdog or the critiquer, you know, it's a lot easier to, you know, critique people than being on the other side when you're actually having to do things without the resources you need. And I mean, it's not like you want to be that way or you want to function that way at all. You see those deficiencies for sure.
It's beautiful in the sense that you got to see and live and in both sides.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate that so much.
And you were working with youth.
Yes. On the advocate side. And I'm very passionate with youth, especially back then. And I also was doing some counseling with youth after hours. And with that, because of all my experience and things that I've seen, I saw some, it didn't matter if you were born in poverty and in a disadvantaged sort of a living situation, or you were upper middle class where you have like anything and everything, there were struggles that were similar.
Really?
Yes.
What are some of the core or common struggles you would see in youth?
Well, there was always the comparing of each other. So no matter what, if you were a richy, richy, rich, you were still comparing yourself to other, and you just felt inadequate and insecure and not, you know, you were, yeah. And of course, when you're in poverty and you're seeing other people, there's the haves and the have-nots, and then you're looking at the haves, you feel insecure, maybe inadequate, not good enough, you know, those types of So, and with that comes many, many layers of other things. And so my book that I wrote, which won 2 book awards, which I'm very proud of, it was called Am I the Only One Struggling Being a Teen? Because when I was counseling, and like I said, I was working during the day with those that were in the system of some sort. And that's very, very hard. It's powerless, disempowered sort of place to be. And then those that are the haves that have, you know, parents can buy them anything, they still feel like they're inadequate as well and not worthy. It's more like that the self-worth was the big thing that I was seeing. And so I just wanted to let people out know, like all the kids know, you're not the only one.
Oh, I'm getting this book. I am living this. I have 13, 15, 17. This stuff doesn't change.
Yeah.
This is common. This is obviously a part of development in adolescence. But and it seems to me that it's just kind of across the board. And I try to tell my kids that, but
I know.
I think having someone write a book.
Yes.
I think, I can see all of your expert things. You know how we were talking about at the beginning?
Right.
I can see the self-care expertise.
Right.
The adolescence, the understanding what they're going through. And don't you think that just decade by decade, we're almost becoming experts in more things?
Yes.
So that makes sense that you have a few areas of expertise.
Right. And it's not only just because of my experience and I'm in things, but I'm just so fascinated by everything. Like I don't know how people are bored. because I'm like, oh my God, if I had more time, I would I just want to learn and learn and learn and learn. And it's just, I find just, yeah.
Me too. I'm very curious.
Yes.
I always say I'm on the podcast, I'm just curious. So I'm just going to ask you questions that I'm curious about. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that the idea, you know, because there's the privilege is a common word now, which is the haves.
Right.
The haves. The haves and the privileged still have these comparison and these struggles. But I think the issue that they run into is they don't feel worthy of the struggle because they're privileged and they don't know what to point at. They don't really understand why it's happening because everyone is telling them that they shouldn't have any issues.
Right.
But they still have them.
Yes.
So maybe this is more of an adolescent normal issue, developmental, than something that you need to pinpoint, oh, this is why. Maybe it's just something you have to go through and learn.
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. I can't wait to read the book. Okay, so then after the book, where do you go? What happens? So you're doing some counseling, right. Write the book, then what?
And then I took a position. It's called an ICFS agency, Indigenous Child Family Services Agency. And it was out of town, so I had to live out of Saskatoon. And so I was leading and responsible for a child protection agency for like a First Nations child protection agency that also did prevention work, which was really cool. So with ICFS agencies, they get funding for the protection piece, but also funding for the prevention, like early intervention for at risk, like early intervention. And that's something that the government doesn't have. It's just like they don't, I mean, back then they didn't. They're more a little bit more open to that. But again, it's government funding and it's always limited. But so that was probably, I would say that the first door that opened in regards to a leadership position. And then when you get thrown in, I wouldn't say thrown in because of course I applied for it, but there's nobody there to sort of teach me anything.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And you know, you learn by mistakes. You have to be open to feedback, and I am, thank God I am. And I am kind of one of those leaders, and I still am that way. I'm like, yes, I have some roles and responsibilities here, but I can't do it without you. Like, you are all valuable to me to do my job well.
I do think that's a common aspect of feminine leadership. I think that women, and in all the conversations I have, they really want to talk to people and bring those people around them to support them. And self-awareness is something that seems to be quite prevalent in feminine leadership. So all genders can embody both feminine and masculine. Women just tend to have more of the feminine leadership
skills. But all genders, of course, can embody both of these. But I think that's something that is just so beneficial. I know with myself, as soon as I feel like I hit a roadblock or I hit something or I'm stuck, I am reaching out to everyone
yes.
that I know asking for help.
Yes.
Asking for feedback, which I don't love getting. But I recognize that for someone to give me feedback takes their time and their energy and their care. Mm-hmm. So that means they care about me being successful.
Yeah.
So now I ask for it frequently.
Yes. And I also ask those that I know that are going to tell me the truth. And that's where it's hard. You know, you're eventually like, okay. No, but, you know, after a day or two, I'm like, yeah, they're totally right. Yeah, no, I need to work on that or whatever it is. Like, you know, and then I'm grateful. I'm like, I'm so grateful that they had the courage to be able to tell me that. And because of those truths, you know, those sometimes they're difficult truths, that brings me to, you know, to the next level. Like then I'm there's growth there.
Yeah. The reason it's uncomfortable is because we have to grow now, and then it's uncomfortable to grow, but it's so rewarding.
Yes. Yeah.
And it does take courage to give feedback as much as to receive it.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Thank you to all of you out there who give and receive feedback
yes.
graciously.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you're working.
Yeah. So I did that for a couple years. Well, more than, I would say 2.5 years. Now that was the part where I was starting to sense the burnout, and there was, child protection in itself is like, it's you just can't turn off your brain because, you know, some situations that may have happened, and, you know, and it's not a 9-to-5 sort of thing. And I was also working a lot of on call. So like 3 o'clock in the morning and those types of things, calls. And I wasn't just only felt like I was responsible for the communities and maybe hopefully keeping children safe. And also hoping that we weren't making decisions that were harmful to children, because sometimes even bringing them in care is creating more harm than, you know, and it's hard to know because you don't maybe have all the information to make those really, really good decisions. And so those keep you up at night, but also to the HR stuff, keeping an agency going, you know, the budget responsibilities, like the financial responsibilities of a board. Then it was like kind of some health issues were coming. So it was started off like with insomnia. I'm like, well, that's just typical. Yeah, I can't sleep because of whatever. But then when you can't sleep and sleep and sleep, then, you know, things start breaking down because you're not recovering and healing like you're supposed to be while you sleep. And then it was headaches, which then you're just like, oh, just popping, you know, Tylenol, which you can't be doing. Like, that's terrible for your gut and your liver. But then it became where I was getting heart palpitations. And that was like, okay.
Okay, can I ask how old you were when this was happening?
I know. So I would have been like probably 40.
Yeah, because this is perimenopause as well,
mm-hmm.
which we can no longer push through.
Right.
The stuff, the jobs, that scares women because they think, but I'm running at 120%.
Right. Yes.
When perimenopause hits, what am I going to do? And I'm like, well, you're not going to keep doing that.
Right.
So then, because I'm right in that right now,
yeah.
in that heart palpitations.
Yeah.
Heart palpitations, sister. So, okay. So then okay. what?
Well, and then because I was, I also wrote a book, Eating Myself Crazy, like years and years ago. But because of that, like I knew, I was like, okay, Trini, you wrote this book and you know exactly what's going on in your body. Like, you know this stuff. And and I knew I couldn't push through it because when you get those red flags or those little alarm bells are ringing, you need to stop. So I did that and it was difficult because although it was hard work, I loved what I was doing. I had a lot of pride in that. My identity was attached to that. There was all these benefits to that. I mean, I was making a good salary. I loved the people I worked with. I mean, I was losing everything by walking away, like I felt. And then it was like, what am I going to do now? Like, what am I going to do? Like, I could always go back to social services, but I was like, no, I can't do that. That's, to me, like, I felt it was taking a big step back. So I took some time off. I did like some few contracts here that I did enjoy, but they weren't like as fulfilling, but they were just kind of like keep me busy and you know, to keep, you know, generate an income. And then I took the most amazing position ever, but there was some sacrifice attached to that. It was on a remote island on the West Coast, like not Vancouver Island, remote island off the West Coast of BC. And there's only one little community, First Nations community on this island. And I got a contract there for 2 years. And so the sacrifices, I had to live away from my family. And my husband's like, you're going to do what?
I'm going to choose me.
I know. And people thought I was crazy. I thought it was a little bit crazy too, not going to lie. And I knew we have a very strong marriage. So I knew that there's not going to be any worry about that. But it was just more like, you know, we have to for sure still like see each other, you know. And my children by this time were, you know, out of the house. So we were like really early empty nesters. Mind you, they kind of came back when I left, but I don't know, maybe I was the factor. Maybe like, oh, mom's gone, we're moving back home. That could have been it.
Probably like, somebody has to take care of dad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so but my husband has been with social service because he's also with social service and still is, like, he's coming 35 years here. But he had like tons of holidays. And so, you know, I came home sometimes and he came there. We meet in Vancouver. It was kind of neat. Sometimes we'd have like little rendezvous in like Vancouver. It was super cool. I know. Now he's like, can you find another job like that? Yeah. For the first 6 months, he struggled a bit. But afterwards, he's like, actually, this is actually, you know, it's kind of working out really well. It was the most beautiful place in Canada. It was zen, like the mountains, the ocean, on an island life. And I mean, I came in and they were always like, Trina, like, you need to settle down. Like, things are going to work out the way they're going to work out. And everything was winter dependent because, like, anything that happened. So, you know, if a fog came in or there was a big snowstorm or, like, things shut down. And I'd be like, what do you mean things are shutting down? We have all this planned. Like, you know, and they're like, well, it is what it is. And I had to accept that. I know. Yeah.
That is so not North American.
No.
I love it so much that it actually is North American. It's just not European North American.
Right.
It's not colonial.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
Zen.
Yeah.
Peace. Earth. Mother Earth.
Yes.
Nature.
Yes. And the Heslik people are very, very connected to the land and the water, especially the water, because that's where, you know, 80% of their diet comes from. And the culture is very rich and strong. And so I was immersed in that. And just even all the little spiritual cultural practices, like, oh, it's just amazing. And there are a few things that they do culturally and spiritually that they do that I now can see scientifically why that works, why that there's healing there. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that they do. You know, there's signs that can back that. And they've done that like thousands of years.
So spirituality is so key to health. And I know we have it on the wheel, right? It's like mental and emotional and spiritual and physical.
Yes.
But we're all like, do we need a spiritual if we have the mental and emotional? And like, yes, we do. But it can be what it is for you.
Right.
It doesn't have to fall under a specific umbrella.
Yeah.
But
definitely not religion. Like, you don't, it's spiritual, it isn't religion.
It's not religion. And I think people tend to think it is that.
Yes.
I am so happily jealous, feeling all the feelings in my body right now of you talking about that time. Mm-hmm. What a gift.
It was.
Did it change you?
Yes.
How?
Well, I then feel more connection to the land. I definitely learned that these practices that I saw, I don't practice them myself, but I mean, I see the value in healing in that. And so, of course, now, like, you know, First Nations, they're embracing their culture. They have to relearn it because of the colonization and there, you know, there was lots of harm and of course, all that disconnection. And now they're, you know, rejuvenating that and reconnection in that. And there's healing in that. And there's tons and tons of examples that are constantly every day. And so it is where now I think the world is shifting. I believe there's a shift. I feel there's a shift that we are like recognizing that we are on a path of self-destruction and that we have to like reconnect with ourselves, reconnect with the land, reconnect with whatever, our intuition. There's like everything. Yeah. Yes. And so that got me that 2 years being there, I started reconnecting. And although I wasn't totally lost, but, you know, I was, you know, maybe caught up in career and, you know, padding my resume and I, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm going to like, I don't know. I don't, I, you know, because now it doesn't even matter to me anymore. I don't even remember parts of that.
Yeah,
you know, because I'm on a different path. But so it was like when I would sit there on Saturday morning, I would take my little coffee cup and walk to the rocky beach, and there'd be the eagles flying around in the ocean, and I would just sit there for like 2 hours and like stare into nothingness, you know, just like look and just be. And I did that many, 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 many times, and it changed me as a person.
Yeah, it really does change you. And I think there's unlimited capacity to grow in our spiritual side, which to me, staring into the ocean with a cup of coffee with the eagles, that's spirituality.
Yes.
That's a practice. And I think there's, so what comes to mind for me is like, my cabin is where I go to. We have land and it's just us. There's three people total on a quarter section. It borders two lakes. It's in just a bit north here in Saskatchewan. But when I'm there, it's isolated. Like, I really feel like I can truly be alone. I'm on the lake often, totally alone, paddleboarding on the lake. It's a beautiful lake. You can swim in. I'm connected with the water, with the earth, with everything. And I think, I need to be here more. Like, I am, like, time in Saskatoon in the city is great. I love aspects of my city life. But I feel that I'm missing so much growth, self-growth and discovery by not being in nature more.
Mm-hmm.
So I do sometimes feel that pull and that sort of almost frantic feeling like I want to be more. And I think with our winters are so long here,
right,
that I want to be more connected because that it feels like I'm connected with myself. Mm-hmm. And I think there is something about midlife. It starts at midlife, I think, in women, where we just need to run away into the forest or to the
mountains. Yes.
And
yes.
Be alone.
Yes.
I'm so happy that you had that opportunity.
Yeah.
And how lucky are people who get to work with you now because of those experiences you've had? Like, do you feel like that brings, do you feel, how do I word it? Like, different when you're in corporate? Because you are still in corporate.
Right.
Culture a lot with volunteer work and different things. So do you feel that a lot of the other women and people you're surrounded by are on that similar realization path? Or do you feel sometimes like you're bringing a perspective that's not there?
I think that everybody has that in them. More people are aware of it than others. What I think how it's changed me is that I am now a listener. Like, I don't feel like I have to like throw myself onto people or my opinion, or like I can just listen and observe. And it also helped like me with emotional regulation big time. Yeah. And you know what? That's a mastery kind of that's a skill, like emotional regulation.
Yeah. I would say it's one of the most needed skills in the world.
Yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
Or possibly, probably always.
So when you spend a lot of time with yourself, then you really sit with your feelings and you'll go, okay. And I do this all the time. I'll be like, okay, Trina, what's this all about? Like, what's this really about?
Me too.
Yeah.
I think there is just such a gift in when, you know, either dis-ease or illness or burnout causes us to step back and stop and spend that time. Sometimes we can choose it and sometimes it's forced upon us.
Right.
But it's nice when we can choose it.
Yes.
Like, I feel like even by taking that job, I mean, you kind of had this forcing, but then also took an opportunity that allowed you to do that, because having to sit with your own feelings is something that most people avoid.
Absolutely.
But it's the best thing you can do for yourself.
Yes.
And learn how to regulate.
Yeah. Like, for people to sit by themselves and to have to, like, just feel those feelings, like, it's torture to some people. I mean, it's just, well, so painful. I mean, so much so, we know that a lot of that is because of, you know, the addiction's reason, or people are distracting, or they're trying to suppress, and all those types of things.
Yeah, Gabor Mate has such a beautiful way of talking about that, talking about addiction. So I would recommend listening to any of Gabor Mate's work on addiction, but he says, of course you were using that. You were trying to escape. You were trying to soothe yourself.
Yes.
You didn't have any other tools to know how. There isn't shame in that. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think about the YWCA event with the unhoused, and we know there's a lot of addiction and substance use in that community. And it's not about shame or finding fault in people who are struggling. It's like, of course you're struggling. Look at what has happened. And you're trying to avoid feeling discomfort.
Yeah.
That's a human thing.
Yeah.
It's about, you're the expert on this, not me, but like, what I see is like providing tools as to, okay, but how do you actually regulate?
Right.
How do you actually soothe and have self-care? And then it's even sort of privileged to be able to access a lot of those
things. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a lot of the issue, is that the drugs or the substances are like, I can just like walk down your street here and
like right
there. But yeah, it's really not far from our own houses. And where if I needed counseling or therapy or treatment or like whatever it is, I mean, that's a more difficult process to navigate to those systems. And then of course the expense. I mean, there's all kinds of barriers.
Do you think we could spend just a few minutes kind of finishing up, but just maybe plug the YW a bit?
Yeah,
on the board,
right? Like,
because I feel like this conversation has kind of led almost to this, because they're solution orientated. Tell us a little bit about the YWCA and your role, and summarize that a little bit for us.
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. It's because my first connection with the YW was when I was working for social services and I was working with youth. I was in the 16, 17-year-old unit. I was in various positions with the Ministry of Social Services, but one was working with the YW is called the 16, 17-year-old unit, where youth can voluntarily put themselves in care and you think, why would they want to do it? But there's various reasons why that may occur. And then if they needed a place to stay, especially of course the girls, I would place them at the YW if they had spaces. So I already, you know, had a connection with the YW. And then years and years and years and years later, almost 20 years later, now I'm on the board. I'm one of the board of directors. And now it's been less than a year that I've been on. So they brought on new directors. And, you know, it's a whole different way of seeing the YW, but I think, how can this community would be able to be without the YW? And April 17th is the grand opening of a brand new transitional housing unit, which cost millions and millions, that they fundraised. They did fundraising for. Like, good. Like, that is not easy to, like,
no.
That is a lot of money. I'm not going to take any credit for that, because, I mean, that was already pretty much near completion when I came on. But it is where they have, I think it's 35 units. And some of those units have where moms can have up to 5 children.
Wow.
Yes. And it's needed. So, because there are some families, like some single moms, or like whether they're trying to escape a violent situation, or they just end up, you know, houseless with their children. Thank goodness there is, you know, going to be some more spots available to them through the YW.
And a bit more permanent spots.
Yes. So it's not like emergency. They have emergency, but this is the next step. So it's where they're, you know, can stay, you know, almost as long as they need to until they can find permanent housing. And they get support for that. You know, there's supports and services to help them seek out some more permanent housing.
What an amazing, thriving organization. Yes. The YWCA, I would say, is thriving. I attend events. I was a Women of Influence nominee.
Oh, yes.
Not a winner, but yes. All winners.
Yes.
Just being nominated.
That's right.
A winner.
Yes.
It did feel that way.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's an amazing event, too. Like, it's, yeah, and you're up there. Oh, no.
Oh.
I get that.
I think it was 2023 or 20. I think it was 2023. Yeah, it was amazing. All my family came. It was so fun. Yeah, I'm really glad we got to talk about the YWCA too. And I think, yeah, that's really like planting some seeds in me. It feels good to hear a little bit more about that. I'm so glad you could come, Trina. I didn't even know you. This is like the first conversation more than 5 minutes we've had. And it was really nice to get to know you more.
Well, thank you. It was great being here. And thank you for asking me to be here. Because, I mean, I've listened to your other guests. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to really be as good as everybody else.
Oh, you definitely were. It's just about sharing that lived experience and wisdom, right? We all have so much in us, but it's like pulling it out. I feel right. Like my job is just to like pull it out of women.
Yeah.
I already know.
Thank you.
It was really fun. Thank you so
much. Yes. Thank you.